brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Well, joining us for the full hour, we're very thankful for that, Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer, OperationDarkHeart.com. Lieutenant Colonel Schaefer is a highly experienced intelligence officer and recipient of the Bronze Star, 25 years of field experience. Tony has commanded and directed several key operations, intelligence organizations. These include Special Mission Task Force Stratus Ivy that conducted direct support of DOD, Compartmentalized Activities, OSD, SOCOM, the Army. It goes on about, go through his entire bio here. Operation Dark Heart Story, the New York Times bestseller. They suppressed a lot of it. They bought up some of the first books and then blacked out a lot of it. So they've really been trying to keep him from telling the population of this country and the world what he told Congress and what was suppressed during the 9/11 commission as well. And he joins us to talk about all of this today. Colonel, good to have you here with us.
Well, thank you for having me again, Alex. Good to be on with you.
There is so much to talk about today, and we're going to break in a moment. This is a short segment. But okay. Out of the gates, just recap what happened with your book and what your book does deal with that certain elements of the Pentagon don't want people to see.
Well, it's ironic, Alex, when you think about it. We talked about this on your show. As a matter of fact, we had a detailed discussion about the fact that the Army had just completed reviewing and clearing it the first time you and I talked. So it's interesting that according to the Defense Intelligence Agency, they didn't have a clue. They had no clue that the book was coming until, like, midsummer. I mean, it's beyond the pale of belief. And plus, in addition to mentioning it on your show, I mentioned it on national TV, the O'Reilly Show, Larry King. And in the end, they decided, DOD, with Defense Intelligence Agency leading the charge, literally decided to intercede on the publication of my book the day before the book was going to be distributed nationally. So you got to wonder, why on earth would you wait to the very last minute? And it's very clear, just to summarize before we get into the details, they meant to disrupt the release of the book for any number of reasons. And obviously, despite the fact that it was cleared by the Army, there were apparently a number of things in the book that DOD, and again, the Defense Intelligence Agency is different than the Army, if your listeners do understand it. They are distinctively different organizations within the Department of Defense, and often they have different objectives and views. And for whatever reason, the DIA has, and I think you and I know why, DIA has some pretty bad feelings about me and my disclosures back in 2003, initially to Philip Zelikow at Bagram regarding Able Danger, and then, of course, my testimony, which got me fired in 2005 and 2006. So it's really those issues, I believe, are at the core of why they did this, you know, literally the 11th hour and, you know, interdiction of the book, trying to cause maximum disruption and havoc. Essentially send a message to others to say, you know, you probably don't want to, you know, break ranks because we're just going to make your life miserable any chance we get.
And, of course, we've heard about these new DOD rules that officers can't talk to any media about any subject without authorization. Have they been trying to use that on you?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I did seek and I did obtain guidance before the current publicity tour I'm doing right now. And so essentially the guidance I've been given is that I can talk about the book, which has been cleared, but I have to be careful that I can't talk about certain elements of the Army, I'm an Army reservist, so there's certain things I can't talk about within the context of that. And obviously that I've been reminded of my security oath, which, you know, I'm not sure if you're aware of it, my security clearance was restored as part of the review of the book. So obviously they try to use that to prohibit me from talking about the information they took out of the book. And that's, and by the way, Alex, that's going to be subject of a First Amendment suit against DOD here in the very near future.
Well, let's talk about that suit, what you can talk about that's in the book, and if you can give us any hints in the parameters of the law about what was excised from the book. And we'll also get into some other key issues with Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer, who is a number one bestseller out there right now. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
fresh.
Fight back this cold and flu season with the world's best garlic extract, Alli-C. Why Alli-C? Because it helps your body fight viruses, bacteria, and fungi. Alli-C has been scientifically proven in double-blind studies using low doses to greatly reduce the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Alli-C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin, the active ingredient in crushed garlic. Studies show Alli-C is effective against MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections. One tablet of Alli-C has the equivalent of 40 cloves of garlic. Alli-C supports your body's resistance to all types of conditions and can help lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. So boost your body's resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Alli-C. For more information and to order Alli-C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 1-877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com for your Alli-C today.
Tyranny is here. The grim future foretold in 1984 has become reality.
It really says that the state is God.
The United States is now recognized globally as one of the most oppressive police states on Earth. This film conclusively proves the existence of a secret network of FEMA camps, now being expanded nationwide. This documentary exposes how the continuity of government program has established an all-powerful shadow state. Police State 4 chronicles the sickening depths to which our republic has fallen. Prepare to enter the secretive world of emergency dictatorship. Body scanners, sound cameras, citizen spies, stage terror, and cameras on every street corner. It's only the beginning of the New World Order's hellish plan. The police state isn't coming. It's here. Secure your copy today at Infowars.com or see it online in the highest quality at PrisonPlanet.tv.
There are many types of storable foods, but how about a superfood that contains every nutrient that the human body needs for survival? 50% protein, 300 milligrams of potassium per ounce, and calcium and magnesium for your heart and bones, with many more nutrients found in this incredible food source that the government does not want you to have. This product is available in powder, seeds, and oil, and is shipped free to your door in the U.S. This product is illegal to grow in the U.S., but is legal to import. Don't waste time thinking about storing food. Plan ahead and prepare for yourself and your family now, and be in control of your destiny. You can save and invest your money, but in the end, food will be your greatest asset. Remember what the Word of God says in Ezekiel 7:19. Call 908-691-2608 and see what the powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Remember, food will be your greatest asset. Call 908-691-2608. This product does not contain THC. Call 908-691-2608 today.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
There can be no doubt, mega corporations have basically taken over this country and almost every other nation. They are destroying the Bill of Rights and Constitution. We are broadcasting in occupied territory. We want our republic, our Bill of Rights, our Constitution back. OperationDarkHeart.com is the website. The book is the Operation Dark Heart story, now a New York Times bestseller. Now, the Pentagon grabbed the book, destroyed the original copies, made a deal with the publisher to black out large parts of it. And Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Shaver is one of the chief officers over Stratus Ivy, or the head of that, and also involved deeply in Able Danger. And what is in the book is what he told Congress. And so much came out as the book neared its publication, backing up everything he talked about, that I think that's one of the biggest reasons they've tried to suppress your book. Am I wrong in saying that, Colonel?
No, I think you're right. I think there's three things in popular media right now that you can refer to and very easily pick it up. As a matter of fact, a fellow author at my publisher is General Hugh Shelton. His book is just out, and he actually talks about the existence and success of Able Danger in on page 280-283. So right there's a clue. The next big clue that people have talked about in a little bit is the book called Horse Soldiers, where General Jeffrey Lambert talks about the fact that not only did we discover Muhammad Atta as part of Able Danger that he was briefed on, he admits this, he was the guy who prohibited me from moving the FBI, the information to the FBI relating to the 9/11 terrorists. And then most damning, I think, was a Fox News thing, which was done recently, I think within the last 2 weeks, relating to the fact that they got a hold of the DOD Inspector General report, God bless them for getting a copy that was unredacted, which means they could go out and talk to the actual individuals. The DOD IG had tried to hide the individuals by basically coding everybody, which made it, you know, kind of a gobbledygook, and you really couldn't make heads nor tails of who said what. And I think they did it for a reason. They used the Privacy Act as an excuse, but I think clearly their intention was something different. Well, anyway, they got a copy of the unredacted report with the names. And, of course, the first thing any good investigative organization is going to do is go back and check. And that's what they did. They went back and re-interviewed folks and showed these folks their testimony. The interview results, basically the summary of what was attributed to them. And I think everybody they talked to said, that's not what I said. That's not remotely what I said. And, oh, by the way, they left out key information to include the fact that in one instance one of the witnesses talked about the fact that she was the one who discovered the Muhammad Atta photo. So it's kind of like, you know, those are kind of big facts, and why would you leave those out if not for the fact that you had a narrative you wanted to say that that any facts counter to that narrative would be deleted. So yeah, I think your listeners can go check for themselves. A lot of this is coming out now, and I think one of the grand ironies in all this, Alex, is DOD. Right before that story on the DOD IG report came out, the DOD spokesman said they stand by the report. So you got to ask yourself what's going on if they still stand by a report which has clearly been proven to be less than accurate. And why would they be standing by an inaccurate report if not for some reason?
Well, Colonel, in a nutshell for new listeners, and they've heard about Able Danger, they've heard about Colonel Schaefer, but they heard about your book being suppressed, but they're, you know, what's the bottom line of the story? And correct me if I'm wrong, it's that elements of the Army, headed up by you and others, knew the attacks were coming, knew who the people were, wanted to take them out, and you were blocked from doing that. And some of that came out at the time. You know, Army's angry. Colonels are angry. You know, they had Bin Laden and Atta in their sights. They were told to stand down. And then the media spun it. Well, it was a turf battle. The CIA and private contractors, you know, weren't sharing information, or they wanted to be able to, you know, be the ones that gave the green light, kind of like it's branches of the regular armed services fighting with each other. But, I mean, in a nutshell, boil down, what Able Danger was doing, as much as you can say, and what the book gets into on that subject.
Able Danger was essentially a pre-9/11 designed in the 99 time frame to be an offensive, and this is very critical for your listeners to understand, this was an offensive capability. So often in the Department of Defense we defend things. This was something meant to be something we could go out and take proactive action, and that's the key here, to go after global terrorism, and the primary focus was Al-Qaeda. That's very clear what the objective was. Within the context of that, then, we started doing, and I can't get into the specific operational objectives, but I can say that the data mining thing is but one aspect of it. And this, the data mining thing, while crucial and has become the public face of it, there is a lot more to it than that that still cannot be talked about for any number of reasons. But they do relate to the fact that the idea was to go after these guys offensively. And within the ramp up, any good operation, you have a period of time you're trying to do planning, you're trying to put things together. The ramp up portion included the data mining effort, which was to map Al-Qaeda. And Alex, there was some turf battles, and this is one of those things that recently Michael Scheuer and I were on a show together, and I think he and I publicly disagree about specific operational issues because I think there was competition. But the one thing I think he and I both agreed on is that the aftermath of whatever you want to call happened, there was no intention of taking information from him or me to try to put the pieces back together. With that said, let me continue on the Able Danger issue. Able Danger then was created. We put essentially a blue ribbon team together. General Peter Schoomaker, Commander of Special Operations Command, was the really the protector of it. And the idea was to be prepared on call to go after Al-Qaeda and not to interfere with what Alex Station, and there's been a great deal of discussion, public discussion about Alex Station, Alex Base, and what they did to target bin Laden for covert action. We were not going after bin Laden. We were going after the infrastructure, looking at elements of that infrastructure for purposes of understanding it primarily, and then at some appropriate time using a variety of techniques and procedures to do something to degrade it, to make it less effective than it might be. And that's where the mystery deepens, by the fact that we had continued to work until essentially January of 2001, at which time everything stops. There was a briefing to General Hugh Shelton. This was made public. And then that's where the trail kind of ends.
So you were blocked, bottom line, from frustrating Al-Qaeda.
That's a great summary. Yes, that's essentially the bottom line of what happened. Yes.
Okay, let's get to the heart of this. I'm sure you know about Sybil Edmonds, FBI translator. She's broken her gag order in court. Headline: CIA in control of Al-Qaeda up until day of 9/11. She's listening to people inside our government talking to Al-Qaeda leadership. And, you know, you see that and you think this woman has no reason to lie. Then we have this Fox News headline yesterday: exclusive Al-Qaeda leader dined at Pentagon just months after 9/11. Anwar al-Awlaki. He's the guy reportedly behind the Fort Hood nut. He's the guy behind the underwear dud. He's the guy behind the Times Square, we're told. He's always in contact. And then the CIA for 2 years knows that he's talking to this army officer, the psychiatrist,
right?
And I mean, this is amazing. What do you say to that?
Well, this is where you and I may disagree. I don't know. I'm trying to keep my faith in the government as best I can, and I from my own personal experience, I've seen huge incompetence, and I know that a lot of folks think there may be something more to that. I honestly don't know. I'll say this. The only way we're going to get to the bottom of anything relating to Anwar al-Awlaki, the relationship between he and the Department of Defense, and frankly, the FBI. The FBI at one point in time, if you check the record of Fox News' reporting on this, they actually canceled an arrest warrant for him. He was here illegally by the fact that there was a warrant out for his arrest because he fraudulently came to the United States as a foreign student and had his college paid for.
Well, it's the same thing with a SWAT, the supposed mastermind of 7/7, BBC headline, a SWAT
right.
MI6 protected after attacks. I mean, here you've got somebody having dinner in a big meeting with
right.
the Secretary of the Army, who's a
right.
supposed college student who the news is already saying is involved in 9/11. But if I try to go get into the Pentagon, I'm not going to be able to meet with a sergeant. I mean, this is amazing.
And your point is well taken. On my Facebook page, I posted the very thing you're talking about regarding the dining, and people went wild over it. I mean, it's very clearly something people are concerned and should be concerned about. And this goes back to the original point of why you and I are talking here today. I think there's a narrative out there, no matter what is behind it, there is a narrative which people are dissuaded from pursuing. And that is the narrative of truth, trying to find out what exactly happened. There's this alternate history that's been put forward by the 9/11 Commission, which clearly states, and their bottom line is 9/11 was not preventable, and we just have to accept that fact. Well, I argue that fact to the point of being blue in the face. I think that is just flat
out. Well, they started with the preset statement that this was not preventable, and we're not going to look at how this happened. We're going to look at what we should do, and the answer is a police state.
Well, and to back you up on that a little bit here too, just look at what happened over the last 2 days, Alex, with Leon Panetta over at CIA, and tragically there was 7 CIA officers and 2 guards lost last year at the Camp Chapman, and the answer there, and I'm just baffled by this, is Leon Panetta's comments as director of CIA. Well, mistakes were made, but we're not going to fire anybody. So, you know, you got to ask yourself, why would people like me get fired over, you know, trivial allegations which didn't stand up to any legal process? you know, that I actually lose my clearance and my job over, while others who, you know, literally allow tragedies to happen where loss of life are the prime outcome and nothing ever happens bad. I'm fascinated by the disparity of the standards within our own government.
Well, remember the record up until that time in 2001, the record FBI bonuses were given to the specific leadership that blocked all of the good FBI people who were on the hijackers nationwide.
Right. And I think that's a point well taken. And I'd like your listeners to understand that there are still good people in the government. It's just that they are often ridiculed, set aside, limited, they're put in places of limited scope because of the fact that people like me like stirring trouble up. And trouble to them is just getting your job done.
Well, Colonel Schaefer, I mean, look, yeah. I've got a lot of family who's been in the Army. And almost anyone I've talked to who's been in the Army in my family, the CIA tried to recruit him. And one of them was recruited and got out of it because he just says it was completely criminal stuff inside the U.S., drugs, you name it, in Chicago. And, you know, the CIA is constantly getting caught with airplanes crashing full of cocaine. I mean, my whole issue is we know the government's got a lot of good people in it on the light side, but you've got the dark side that basically operates as a mafia. And, you know, I mean, there needs to be an investigation of why one of the top Al-Qaeda masterminds, the government tells us, Anwar al-Awlaki, is hanging out with the top brass 2 months after 9/11. I mean, that's a big deal.
And I think there needs to be an entire relook, at least in the defense side, of the very issue. I mean, I support a lot of folks that you and I both have friends on Facebook. They have all called for a new investigation. I support that. But if nothing else, we've got to call into account for these actions you just mentioned. I mean, why on earth would you have done this? There's other things regarding al-Awlaki, which are still very peculiar. I'll say that without getting into something too dramatic, as well as the 9/11 issues regarding Able Danger. I mean, it's one of those situations where, you know, it's very clear that I hit a sore spot again by merely putting, and your listeners, I hope they will go out and pick the book up at some point, Darkheart, by the fact that I go through in painful detail to give the reader a good understanding of what happened in that room when I mentioned Able Danger to Dr. Philip Zelikow. And Alex, I hope you understand, I went in there with as many facts that could be verified as possible so that he could leave that room and go back to the United States and pursue getting the document, getting the information necessary. And, of course, one of the big mysteries, and this was something I will talk about because I had to threaten the DOD editors when we went through my book again in early September, that they actually tried to pull a paragraph out where I talk about the fact that Defense Intelligence Agency allowed my 9/11 Able Danger documents to go missing. And I had to threaten them. I said, look, I'm not standing, this is it. You know, you can pull a lot of crap out, but this is the deal. The moment you start pulling information out, which relates directly to my congressional testimony, you may do that, but you will lose by the fact that I will just stick a copy of my testimony in the back of the book and people will still see it. So you've got to wonder why, you know, we're talking about information which in some cases is over 10 years old. The disclosure was made in 2003. Why would they be interested in redacting information relating to that meeting if they're not concerned about it? So
for those that don't know, and it's all in the book, Darkheart, but tell us, I mean, what did Zelikow, I mean, what did you say to him about Able Danger that freaked him out?
Well, it was, we were all in this room. This is October 2003 in a combat zone. And Dr. Zelikow and three other of his staff were actually at Bagram doing kind of a whirlwind tour of the combat zone, trying to find people who had pre-9/11 intelligence that had not been previously provided to them. Essentially, I think it was a very wise move to go out and just kind of, you know, go out into the bush and see what you find from knocking some rocks over. With that said, I don't think they really wanted to find out what was under those rocks based on what happened. During this meeting, I had a full hour to brief him at the end of about a 40-minute briefing where I did a point paper and laid out to him the full scope of a clandestine human intelligence operation relating to Able Danger as well as the Able Danger project itself. And at the end of that hour, there was just stunned silence. And I talked about the fact that we discovered the 9/11 hijackers, at least four of them, who were in two of the three cells which conducted the successful 9/11 attacks. And most notably, at the end of the meeting, after everybody was getting ready to leave, Zelikow comes up to me, presents his card to me, and says, what you've said today is critically important. I need you to come see me when you return to the United States after your tour here in Afghanistan. So that was the result. Zelikow being just, I can honestly say I think there was a moment of being stunned by his entire staff and everybody in the room by the fact that talked about our finding Mohammed Atta and the other hijackers in our data mining effort to target Al Qaeda. And there was no doubt of his concern because he personally later admitted right before my hearings in 2006 that, yes, they did go back and check on Able Danger. But according to them, the Pentagon only gave them two briefcase, container sized things, and there was nothing in them. And this is the peculiar thing, Alex. You know, they've already figured out now the Pentagon's lied to them about a number of things relating to the attack, the NORAD issues and some other things. But for some reason, Zelikow still backs the Pentagon on this one issue, saying, oh, no, we're sure that the Pentagon is telling us the truth. So anyone who's been around Washington any length of time understands the moment someone does something like that, where, you know, they've been lied to multiple times, but this one thing they're telling the truth on, you know, they feel they're telling the truth on, that means there's something there. And I think your listeners are very intelligent and can figure out for themselves that there's some reason they don't want this to be talked about, and they're continuing this effort to suppress me and what I talk about as best they can. And I think in this case, with my book, it backfired on them.
Well, absolutely. And Colonel, I mean, a lot of people don't know this, but it's been in the news, but it hasn't gotten the attention it should. Six of the 10 commissioners of the 9/11 Commission are on record saying the Pentagon has been involved, one of them used the term, in a criminal cover-up, and that we were lied to by the Pentagon and the White House. And then along comes a colonel who is not corrupt and backs up that information, and they're trying to suppress your book when a lot of what's in your book, I've now had a chance to read most of it, has already come out in pieces and been confirmed in other declassifications, other books that have been written. It's just that you put it all together and have a conclusion that they don't like.
I think it's absolutely correct. I think when you put the totality together, you start seeing a picture emerge. And this is one of the things, you know, the Army, God bless them, were very good about forcing me during the initial review. And let me be very clear here. There is a lot of information that was truly classified regarding things I did in Afghanistan that we cannot talk about because it is truly classified. With that said, the Army made me source everything. I actually hired a researcher who went through and found open sources of pretty much everything in the book. And my objective here, Alex, was not to reveal secrets, but to create a narrative, a true narrative, that showed factually what happened, what went wrong, and not only regarding the Able Danger thing, but the larger war in Afghanistan, why things have gone so badly wrong there. And the last chapter, which you'll see in the book there, is The Path to Victory, where I actually sat down and worked on coming up with reasonable courses of action for the future to include. I went to Ireland, did some original research talking to folks in Northern Ireland regarding the Irish peace process.
And that's probably what they really don't like, is that you're now trying, in their view, to, quote, meddle in policy when all that's really happening is they're meddling and things are, you know, getting worse and worse over there.
Well, and I think that's the problem. You know, when you and there's been some huge mistakes here, Alex. Let me just say a couple of things for your listeners, which are obvious, but I think people, the press in particular, has not done a good job picking up on. We announced the surge, and then we announced the five provinces we were putting people into. And I've always talked about this is akin to would you have told the British to tell the Germans, hey, by the way, we're only going to hit four beaches on D-Day, and these are the beaches, so just be prepared for us to hit on June 6th. We didn't do that. And then the other thing, when you start looking at the actual effects of what we're doing, this New York Times article from 2 days ago talked about us being able to basically just slicing up the Taliban, doing a great job of taking Kandahar back. Well, of course, it took us 6 months to do that. And Hamid Wali Karzai, the current governor of Kandahar and the Kandahar province, talks about by the way, the brother of President Karzai, president of Afghanistan, comments that, well, you know, the Taliban have left, but we don't know where they went. Well, of course not. It's like trying to nail, you know, jello to the wall.
Well, by the way, his brother is the biggest opium dealer.
And that's, I think, been very well reported on by a number of credible sources, by the fact that, you know, that the reason that the drug problem is as prominent as it is not only because of the Taliban, but because of elements other than the Taliban possibly, you know, official elements being engaged in that very issue. And that's why you see, that's one of the reasons you see the slippage at Marsha. Marsha was supposed to be the textbook example of how we're going to secure the rest of the country. And you and I both know, Alex, that's essentially slipped back into chaos now. So when you look at the actions of how we've done things, why we're doing them, you've really got to ask yourself, and this is why I wrote, it was one of the reasons I wrote the book, is for the American people to ask some really hard questions. What do we hope to accomplish when everybody, to include President Obama, has talked about the fact that the real issues are not in Afghanistan, they are in Pakistan. And until we take those issues seriously, we will continue to essentially make no progress.
Let's talk about your plan, you've been there, you've been through it, you've tried to study the region. Your idea for, you know, ending this war on good terms versus where you see things going. I want to get more into the book, Dark Heart, and some of the things you can now talk about. Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer is our guest. I'm Alex Jones, InfoWars.com.
We're on the march. The Empire's on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Global meltdowns, massive unemployment, endless wars, a new currency crisis, financially and morally bankrupt. A great and terrible storm is approaching. So what's the best way to get ready, to get prepared for hard times ahead? In producing Off the Grid News, a weekly newsletter for independent patriots who want practical advice on how to survive and prosper in an increasingly dangerous world. It's the best way to get a black belt in emergency preparedness, survival skills, and off-the-grid living. Off the Grid News is fiercely independent. All about self-reliance and packed with helpful information on survival gardening, food preparation, alternative energy, herbal medicines, privacy and security, as well as God, gold, and guns, with absolutely no apologies. And the best part, this $100 a year service is now free of charge for our listeners. That's right, free for our listeners who sign up at offthegridnews.com. That's offthegridnews.com. You can sign up free at offthegridnews.com. Offthegridnews.com.
They helped to create a new world order.
We are part of a new world order.
A new world order based upon collective action.
Invisible Empire is a damning indictment of the globalists through their own words and documents.
The new world order really is a tool for addressing a new world of possibilities.
It means all the world under their control.
The United Nations would take over America. The Trilateral Commission would control the world.
Invisible Empire chronicles how men of power and influence have worked in stealth for centuries to establish an oppressive world government.
I believe, first of all, that we now need nothing short of a world constitution for the global financial system.
Global governance with the establishment of the G20.
So it's going to be an inner ruling elite and then everyone else. And I got news for you. You're everyone else.
Invisible Empire. Secure your copy today at InfoWars.com or PrisonPlanet.com. Or watch it online in the highest quality at PrisonPlanet.tv.
Still worrying? From GMO to organic food in jeopardy, divided by economic turmoil, there is still an answer. With just a little knowledge easily acquired, you will literally see food everywhere. Author Linda Runyon has these skills from having lived this way of life and created the tools so you could too. Wild food is economical, nutritious, freely available, abundant, and free for the taking. It is a skill that takes little time to learn, but stays with you for life. And now, for a limited time, it's all on sale. It's called the Buy Buy Old Website Sale. Can you guess what's coming? Absolutely everything's on sale across the board, including our already discounted packages. And you know, the holidays are coming up fast. We don't know if we're going to have another sale this year. This was the only one in 2010 so far. We've been lucky to keep our prices the same since 2008, but who knows what the future will bring. So go to ofthefield.com now, or call toll-free 1-888-51-EAT-FREE. That's ofthefield.com or call 1-888-51-EAT-FREE and cross food off your to-do list.
All right, going right back to Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer. Has the new best-selling book out right now, Operation Darkheart, operationdarkheart.com. We're also streaming the live radio show in living video color at prisonplanet.tv. And I've got a host of subjects I want to cover with him. But summing up your experience there and now watching what's happening in Afghanistan and Pakistan, where do you see the war going versus where you think it should go?
Well, I think the one critical issue, Alex, that we've continued to not fully understand and and deal with is the fact that the real insecurity of that region has to do with the Cold War between India and Pakistan. The Pakistanis are far more worried about the Indians and their nuclear program, and rightfully so, because anytime you have people on your border with nuclear weapons, you have reason to be concerned. With that said, Afghanistan's become essentially a smaller microcosm of proxy warfare, much like we did during the Cold War with the Soviets when we were facing off with them. Everybody else fell into one of two camps, them or us. And I think what you've seen here lately is the Indians, and for any number of reasons, attempting to gain some access to the Afghan region. They built a power plant. They've done other things commercially. And frankly, the Afghans have partnered with them on some things which have made the Pakistanis very uncomfortable. And so you've got things like the Haqqani Network, one of the prime elements of the Taliban. And for your listeners to understand, the Taliban is not a monolithic self-managed organization. It is a tapestry of sub-organizations, often of which have their own objectives relating to their own area of the country. We're talking about tribes which have been there for thousands of years, who will probably always be there in some form. So this is not a cohesive state. So the Taliban have been successfully, in some cases, co-opted by the Pakistani intelligence service, which I talk about in my book. The Haqqani Network, in particular, has become a proxy for the Pakistanis to go after the Indian interest in Afghanistan, to include launching attacks. So the reason I bring this up as a specific is to illustrate the larger issue, the fact that we've got to focus not only on the Afghan government, because frankly, I don't see why we are focused on the Afghan government. We have a number of other allies in the region who are not democracies, and I cite for you the Jordanians and the Saudis, who seem to be doing fairly well as a government, but are not in any shape or form a democracy. So why are we pushing so hard for a Jeffersonian-style democracy where, you're talking about people who think in terms of the 10th century? So I think we're trying to push a noodle up the hill with no even perception of a good outcome for us. I think we need to be focused on Pakistan and Pakistan's nuclear weapons. And in addition to the Cold War, Alex, what we need to be worried about is the fact that both the Taliban elements in Pakistan and Al-Qaeda have stated clearly, without any sort of clarification other than that they're intended to obtain and use nuclear weapons from the Pakistani arsenal against us. And if you look back on the 9/11 attacks, there were actually warnings available to us saying that they intended to do attacks on us, which have been widely talked about. So there's no reason to say that they won't do that now.
Well, Colonel, I mean, here's my issue. Clearly, Pakistani intelligence has ran, the major elements are organized, the different tribes,
right,
with the U.S. In that 9-year war, or 10-year war with the Soviets, and then General Hamid Ghul, our media says, is this great hero back then. Now our media implies, that he's somehow this big leader. But he's come on this show to say, look, your drone attacks, all of this, it's just stirring people up. This is a destabilization operation.
Well, I agree. I agree with my point.
So my issue is, I hear that there's all these Pakistani intelligence connections to the different Taliban groups, which of course are in their country. What do you expect? But I see more connections with our Pentagon, like Alaki, having dinner with the head of the army, than I do to Pakistani intelligence. Are you saying Pakistani intelligence is running attacks against our troops, or what elements? And what do you think of General Hamid Ghul?
Let me answer that in two pieces. First, regarding the destabilization, I could not agree with Hamid Ghul more. I think we have destabilized Pakistan by our actions. I agree with him 110%. The basic fact is this: we don't understand the culture well. I talk about that in my book. I recommend it to your listeners to pick up. And clearly we don't understand the culture. And by our fumbling around in that region, we have helped destabilize the Pakistanis. We put them in a position where they have to basically split themselves regarding their own self-interest, which has resulted in the chaos you now see. With that said, yeah, I do believe there's elements of the ISI who have encouraged the Taliban to maintain an insurgency in Afghanistan, which resulted in the death of U.S. troops. I'm not saying that Amit Gul himself has been involved, but I think that there are elements are. And I've had friends of mine in the media who have been there embedded with the Taliban and gone across the border into Afghanistan.
But the Taliban is Afghanistan, so what you're basically saying is, just like India is trying to influence, Pakistan's trying to influence, the United States is trying to influence.
Right, yes. And with that said, then, I think the best thing we can do is pull ourselves out. And I do agree about the drone strikes as well. I've gone, as a matter of fact, it's been ironic, I've gone on several networks, to include one where I'm fundamentally a conservative thinker, and I had a liberal telling me that they thought the drone attacks was the best thing since sliced bread, which I just found fascinating coming out of a liberal. But with that said, no, I think the drone strikes are hugely destabilizing. And I've used this, I think, before, and you and I may have talked about this. How long would it last for us to be, lobbing missiles into the southwest border where, we got a drug cartel and, say, Nogales coming across the border, and yeah, we fire off one of these drones, fire off a missile and kill, five drug guys, and we take out three families from Minot, North Dakota. How long would that last here? It wouldn't last very long. So why do we have a different standard of attack in Pakistan, where fundamentally, if you don't have a clear shot and you take out what they call collateral damage, you've then created additional generations of terrorists, because obviously this region of the world understands the idea very well of vengeance. That's one of the driving forces.
Well, exactly. You talked about 10th century. Imagine, it's not just if we had drones attacking northern Mexico, but right. Drones attacking areas in Texas, i.e. Pakistan, and just that fundamental primitive level of, it's like Skynet has death birds in the air raining hellfire missiles, down on us. That is going to create people that are going to fight back. Because of vengeance, because of a debt to score, a blood debt, an eye for an eye, and then they're called terrorists. But, bottom line, if somebody killed your family, what would you do? Maybe that's the policy. Order out of chaos. They want to go in and get Pakistan's nukes. They want to destabilize Pakistan. They want to have a radical Muslim uprising as a pretext to go into Pakistan. And that's what General Hamid Gul and others have said on this show, they believe, is the real endgame.
I that's one of those things where you and I may disagree, but the fact is the fact, and what you're stating essentially are the facts, as they're now kind of self identifying. Yeah, the fact is that we have, and I believe we can, one of the things my think tank has done is we actually, by just taking a step back and looking at the facts, do believe that by the U.S. inability, and again, you may attribute it to a deeper objective, I attribute it to basically incompetence and not understanding what the hell we're doing, the fact that we, by our very actions, have helped destabilize Pakistan and have resulted in the government being probably the least stable it's ever been in since it was an inception in 1947, and it's not going to get any better by the fact that we continue to do the very bad acts to help destabilize.
And you've got this nationalistic, long, hundreds-year-old plus. Pakistan and India had, two wars last century alone,
right.
Big ones with each other, and they've got disputed areas in Kashmir. If I was India, I'd be wanting to bury the hatchet and work with Pakistan, but either side doesn't want that, and this could get... So what is your plan from the deep research you've done and in being over there in the culture deep? What is your plan to extricate ourselves from the region?
Well, first thing I would do by the president, I would declare victory and leave Afghanistan tomorrow. And I would just say, we've done our job. We've not had a terrorist attack mounted from Afghanistan since we invaded. It's time to leave. And with that, and I would not completely leave the country. I think we would probably leave about 20,000 troops, mostly special operations guys, there to focus on just elements that we need to focus on to make sure that no other terrorist training camps are created, things like that. Basically, trying to fundamentally make sure that things don't happen as they did in the late 80s, early 90s, where we basically left the country for anyone to go in there and do what they wanted. And then work with the Pakistanis and the Indians to negotiate a peace process. One of the things I found very helpful, and again, you may disagree with me on this, but General Petraeus said 2 weeks ago that we need to establish a Northern Ireland peace process for the region.
And you've been saying that 6 months ago, so maybe they're listening to you.
Well, it's interesting. I hope maybe General Petraeus actually got one of the copies of the unredacted books before they shredded it at the Pentagon. But yes, he actually said that, and I think it's notable, and here's why. The Northern Ireland peace process, one which was very bloody, and this is one of the notable things, I'm not sure if your listeners fully understand, that was not a pleasant process. It took both sides at one point in time, essentially self-eliminating the most extreme elements of their ranks, and it was one of those things where it was breaking a pathology. What we have now is a pathology. We have generation after generation kind of doing the same thing, and we need to find a way to give them alternative things to do. And you know, these folks are going to be tribal. They've been tribal for thousands of years. There's no reason to believe that they're going to behave differently and come to a 21st century understanding of society.
And it's a lot cheaper to not have trillion-dollar wars, but to actually build some schools and roads. And I mean, just give cash payments to every person in Afghanistan. I've seen the breakdown. It'd be a lot cheaper to do that than to continue this.
Right, exactly. And then, look, I got to say, abandon the Karzai government. If it survives on its own, wonderful. If not, then so be it.
Because we're claiming we're giving them democracy, but it's the opposite. Everybody knows he's been stealing these elections.
Right. And that makes us look hugely stupid, Alex, in the eyes of the world. You know, where is our standards here for actually knowingly supporting a dictator?
So they want to be able to self-determine. That's what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying, and I think that's the best course of action for us, to not determine for them what's best for them. I think that's arrogant and socially, you know, going to get us in trouble by the fact we are then trying to nation build, not do what's necessary to support our own.
Well, really, isn't it just the liberal control freaks just love to control countries?
Well, it's interesting because one of the things, don't get me wrong, I when I was there on the ground, and I talk about this in my book, about the fact that when I was down in Kabul, what we would do, the little kids would come up and want to be our quote-unquote bodyguards. And this was them kind of taking us around the shops, and they would get kickbacks from us and the shop owners. And I always made a point to pick a female bodyguard, which drove the elders crazy because, you know, well, that's really a little boy's work, not a woman's work. With that said, the liberals have made a cause of this where they're saying, well, you know, if we leave, the Afghan women will be, you know, victimized. You know, as much as that is tragic and I feel personally bad about it, it is not our job to determine every single society's what's good and what's bad for them. I mean, I know that sounds harsh, but, you know, the idea of securing a country just simply because we have a social requirement to do so, you know, we just don't have...
But you know that's a cover because the same, quote, liberals love robot drone attacks that blow up whole weddings.
Right, and so we have imprecise use of force, which I think has caused more harm than good. So yeah, the bottom line, Alex, is we need to step away from what we're doing and step away from the Karzai government. Allow the tribes to exist and come together or not come together as they want. And this is a problem we face now too. One of the reasons the Taliban has been so effective, and this is again self-evident, but not something that readily is discernible from just looking at the news. When we came in there in 2002-2003 and began work, the Taliban were hated because of their rigid form of Sharia law. Well, break, we've got all this time goes by, and the very thing that's drawing them to the people of Afghanistan is this very, very rigid form of Sharia law because the central government cannot give them justice. One of the things the central government has completely failed to do is be fair. And as you pointed out, essentially it's become a dictatorship. It has no relevance to the Afghan people. So when faced with two alternatives, often they will choose the less bad one of the two. And in this case, they will go to the Taliban to resolve disputes because the government is even when they bribe the government, they can't get it.
Plus,
done.
It makes the Taliban look like heroes when they're going up against the powerful U.S. Eagle.
Right, exactly. So you've got to consider the fact that, you know, when you look at the what's going on, what the real facts are and what we're accomplishing, you've got to, you know, I still question the policy. And then, you know, in the end, we're talking about withdrawing under a conditions-based relief where, where we're supposed to draw down. But I have yet to be able to find anyone who can tell me or find any specific instances on the Internet of what those conditions are going to be next July.
So if they don't go with your idea or other people's, to end this nightmare, briefly, Colonel, because we're running out of time and I could talk to you for 10 hours. You're so gracious to be with us. I mean, how do you see this ending or what direction do you see it going in if they don't inject sanity into the process?
Well, I think we're talking about the end of very similar to the Soviets. When we, you know, when we leave, begin leaving next summer, the Taliban, as far as I can tell, has not stopped this momentum. And don't forget, everybody's there that we're going to send there now. So it'll probably end with, you know, instead of us driving across the Freedom Bridge, it'll be us, you know, convoying out to Karachi and letting things go back to the chaos they were before, because there's just no way we're going to be able to stabilize and maintain the Karzai government unless we're there holding their hand. And I just don't see that happening. Next 2 years.
I want to shift gears and get back into the book after the break in our final segment, books Dark Heart, Operation Dark Heart. We'll give you the website, folks, but it's in bookstores everywhere. It's a bestseller. Briefly, have you seen the Fox News piece and AP pieces where they go and talk to Marine Corps colonels on video and that our military gives them fertilizer and helps them grow the opium? And I understand the argument, well, if we don't do this, you know, then they'll hate us even more. But, I mean, production's off the charts, and our military controls most of those borders and the conduits to ship out. And you know how many times in Vietnam and right through the military has been caught and contractors have been caught, and that's coming out in federal depositions dealing with XE, formerly Blackwater, that, you know, the people running this system, they don't care because it's a black hole to pump money into. They get to launder the drug money. I mean, have you seen the news clips where Geraldo's up there and the Marine Corps colonel is admitting they're helping grow the opium?
I'm aware of those. And the thing is, when I was there in 03, I can cite for you a specific experience I've had on this. We knew in 03 that the drug groups were essentially starting to resurge and put things together. And we purposely, at that time, Alex, turned a blind eye to it. And the thinking was, the policy thinking was, if we don't allow them to do this, they'll have no income. And the ultimate result has been, obviously, for other elements of the Afghan government and the Taliban to benefit from this illicit drug trade. So, you know, there's really no new policy or no real effort to stem the tide of the drugs for any number of reasons. And I think it's one of those situations that no one in the government is going to admit to the fact that the, you know, if you look at what's going on, the facts don't meet with the policy. The policy is obviously we're trying to stop it. But the reality is, you know, I think we've done far more to give it lip service than actually take any action one way or another to actually try to stop it.
Well, wait, giving them fertilizer and helping guard it, I mean, that's not just taking no action. I mean, the production's off the charts.
And that's and again, you got to ask yourself, what are we trying to do there if we're allowing this to happen?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's hidden in plain view. $500 billion opium, 92% of world production. It was down to like 10%. With the hardcore nutty Taliban over there before. But we had to go into Afghanistan because the terrorists were over there. Now the opium production's off the charts. You don't think the CIA or the contractors would be doing something with that drug money?
Soon we'll be shutting our doors and windows, shutting out fresh air for months. Did you know you're also keeping in allergens, bacteria, and germs that cause colds and flu? What if there was a low-cost way of blanketing your home with clean air? There is. Introducing the AeroAsis 3000 Air Purifier. It utilizes new patent-pending nanotechnology, producing a blanket of oxidizers that cleans the air and sanitizes the surfaces. Imagine not spreading the cold or flu bug to everyone around you. AeroAsis 3000 Air Purifier. Fires are made in the USA, come with a 3-year warranty, have no filters to replace, no grids to clean, and require no maintenance for 3 years. Try the AeroAsis 3000 Air Purifier risk-free for 30 days. GCN listeners, get $100 off when you order at breathebetterair.com or call 806-477-0322. That's 806-477-0322. And get the best air purifier for the best price at breathebetterair.com.
Hi, this is Alex Jones. Did you know that the global elite are now storing non-hybrid seeds in secret storage vaults near the Arctic Circle? Did you know that in a real meltdown, non-hybrid seeds can become more valuable than silver or gold? It's true, seeds have outperformed even gold and silver before in this country, and it's possible that could even happen again. So our friends at Solutions from Science have put together the perfect mix of non-hybrid seeds. They call it a survival seed bank, and it can produce an endless supply of nutrient-dense food for you and your family. And here's the best part. These seeds have not been genetically modified in any way, and you actually get enough seeds to plant a full-acre crisis garden. So visit them today at SurvivalSeedBank.com. That's SurvivalSeedBank.com. Or give them a call at 877-327-0365. That's 877-327-0365. Remember, in a real crisis, non-hybrid seeds are the ultimate barter item. This is Alex Jones for SurvivalSeedBank.com.
Your natural organic herbal formula for heart health is Heart and Body Extract.
My name is Van, and I'm 68 years old, and I live in Vermont. In the spring of 2003, I started to have problems with my heart. It felt like my heart was pounding, made me feel breathless. I tried many, many different things to try to get some help for myself. Nothing did anything.
Heart and Body Extract is very powerful, very effective, and works quickly.
I saw one of Sharon's ads and ordered Heart and Body Extract. I noticed a difference quickly, within days. The episodes became less frequent, and by a month had completely vanished.
Usually you find a 30-day or 60-day guarantee. Heart and Body Extract comes with a lifetime 100% ironclad money-back guarantee. Details at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. Call 866-295-5305. 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract.
All right, we've only got him for this segment and a little five-minute segment at the start of the hour. Then we're getting into all the world news and economic news and Bill Clinton campaigning against Rand Paul in Kentucky. It's just incredible, the riots all over Europe, France ground to a halt. But I'm going to fire out a lot of quick questions now here at Colonel Schaefer with his new book out, Dark Heart, Operation Dark Heart. Colonel, first, I admire and respect your courage. I know you've been persecuted for telling the truth. And I appreciate you, you know, assessing what's in plain view and is self-evident about this failed war that we're now going into the 10th year of. Looking at this situation and looking at all the other things that are happening around the world, just recapping, where do you see this ending?
Well, the problem is I think we've been so distracted with the Iraq and Middle East issues relating to Iraq and that sort of thing. I don't think we're actually postured to look at the future very well. There's some global competitors we have to start thinking about. And the Chinese, I think, in particular, are someone who, you know, are going to be our friends as long as we continue to make our payments. We've got some huge debt with them, which, you know, if we can't make the payments, I think they become very mafia-like. And I think one of the things we've neglected to watch carefully, and this is something I actually studied back in the 90s, the Chinese as a country, as the government of China, have the desire to become essentially the superpower of the Pacific Rim. And we have two allies in particular, besides the Japanese in particular and the South Koreans, there's two other allies in that area, the Australians and New Zealand defense and the New Zealand folks, the Kiwi, who are concerned about what's going to happen should the Chinese become much more dominant in that region. And I think that's one of the things we have to be.
Well, they've already, as you know, taken over most of the mining for rare earth minerals that are key to missiles, cell phones. And China has announced they are cutting back on rare earth minerals to the United States. And so that means we won't be able to make stuff here because they've been smart. They've gone out in Africa and Australia and Latin America and South Texas and the Rockies, wherever you can find these. And they've literally created a 94% global monopoly over this. They own most our debt. I mean, this Washington has completely destroyed this country's security.
And I think we've, because of our own negligence, have not been studying this as much as we should and trying to understand how to play this as a chess game, not as a checkers game. So I think that's where we have some real problems coming up over the next 10 to 15 years. And I think our kids, God bless them, will have to be dealing with this much more directly than we did. And I think it's sad that we're going to leave this legacy for them to deal with.
Well, the elites of this country made deals with the communist Chinese to accelerate and consolidate wealth, and now we're going to pay big time. What's your take on... just the state of the banking situation and the mortgage corruption and just, I mean, it's like Washington is just filled with scum.
Right. And I think that's a problem. We have people who don't have a lot of vision or integrity. And I think that translates badly for the larger country. I think you're about to see some of that over the next few weeks in the elections coming up. I think there's going to be a backlash to a lot of the status quo. And Alex, this is one of those things that just as a microcosm, I think everybody has to have a certain level of integrity and self-correction inside of them. Anytime I ran an operation, I had a very simple test. I had the Ed Bradley test and the Joe Sixpack test. And I'm not saying that as a pejorative. I just wanted to explain it real quick. Whatever operation I was running, I would always think in my head, if Ed Bradley showed up at my doorstep, would I be able to answer his questions correctly and honestly and still look good on 60 Minutes? That was one of my, believe it or not, that was one of my things. And secondly, would Joe Sixpack, would some individual, male or female, doesn't matter, in, you know, the Midwest approve of my use of his or her taxpayer dollars? And I think these are very, very simple, but I think, you know, good rules to go by. So if I couldn't honestly, you know, say that if my actions were related in some way to answering an affirmative one of those two questions, then I figured I shouldn't be doing it.
Wow, that's a simple but succinct way of doing it. It makes a lot of sense. We're going to have five more minutes with you on the other side. I want to get a little bit more into the book and some of the other things you can now talk about. So just a few key points on that, some bullet points. And then I want to briefly ask you about cybersecurity and the Stuxnet worm. On the other side, we'll be back in 70 seconds with the third hour. Then Bob Chapman will be coming on, InfoWars.com.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.